Let me get right into the text that's been on my heart for a couple weeks that we're to today. One of my favorite passages in the Bible because it's just so rich. There's so much stuff. Romans 1, verse 18 and 19, the wrath of God. Isn't it interesting? This is one of my favorite verses that starts with the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. So let me start. I came in here this morning. I kind of rewrote my whole sermon. Hate it when I do that on a Sunday morning. But because of some of the events that have happened, let me just ask, have you ever witnessed the truth being suppressed? Okay. This is so timely. But last night, the Twitter removed Trump from their platform. And Apple removed Parler from the App Store. And my question is, why would they do this? Why? Could it be because they're trying to suppress truth? That's as far as political I'm going to go today, because that would be way too dangerous today. That's not the heart of my message. It's not where I'm going today. But as I get into this, let me tell you, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who I think is just brilliant, he was executed under the Nazi regime for being a part of an execution attempt against Adolf Hitler. In his book, he writes how disappointed he was in the Church of Germany, how they turned a blind eye to what was going on in their nation around them. How they were content to go to church and sing hymns and turn away from the atrocities that were going on. They didn't want to see it. Tim Keller, he writes, near the end of World War II, the first town with a concentration camp that the Allied forces liberated was a town called Ordruf. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but something like that. The Nazis tried to get rid of any evidence of the camp, but the Allied soldiers got there before they could do this. The Nazi soldiers fled the scene, and the American GIs witnessed hundreds of dead bodies. This is the first concentration camp that they had witnessed. A few hours later, General Patton arrived and promptly vomited upon witnessing the scene. The next day, Patton brought the mayor of the town and his wife to see for themselves what they undoubtedly knew was happening in their town. And he ordered the mayor and every able body in the town to dig graves for each of the bodies. After they dug the graves and conducted a funeral for the deceased, Patton found out that the mayor and his wife hung themselves. And they left a note that read, "We didn't know, but we knew." Tim Keller says, "We know, but we don't know because we don't want to know." The truth of what we're dealing with, what we dealt with last week, what we're dealing with today, what we're dealing with for the next several weeks, the truth sometimes can be way too uncomfortable. And demands way too much from us. It demands us to change. It demands us to do things we don't want to do. We're scared. We whatever. So subconsciously we choose not to know. We choose not to know. And the question that I want to bring for you today here is where are we suppressing the truth? Maybe in politics, I said I wasn't going to talk about politics, but I don't want to talk about politics. But think about this here. Is there a good side? Is there a bad side? Is one side right? Is one side wrong? And you can think about all that. You can think about all the other side. And my question right now is, what about your side? How has your side been guilty of suppressing the truth? And then I thought of another illustration. I think in the world of education, switch from politics now, go to education, and think, because this is something I've observed. You know, you send your kids to school, you send them off to college, you want them to get educated, you want them to get the best jobs because you want them to be rich and be successful. And are the colleges, are they teaching our children, or are they indoctrinating our children? Because how many times we see these kids go off to college faithful in their walk with God and they come back as atheists? Yet we keep sending them to college. Why are we doing it? Is it we don't want to see this? We're just too lazy to raise our kids ourselves, and we feel inferior. We don't know what truth is, or we care more about money than what we care about truth. You look at it 1,000 different ways, but we keep sending them off. They keep coming back not believing in the Lord anymore. Something seems like it has to change. I read this. Imagine a man whose wife died, leaving him one son. And he's really frustrated and disappointed in his career. So as a result, everything revolves around his son. Have you ever seen somebody who their whole life revolves around their child or their children? And for him, his life revolved around his son. He sends him to the best school. But the teacher tells him there's a lot of evidence that his son is routinely cheating and stealing. Well, he doesn't want to hear that. He said, that school, they've got problems. They got issues. They're the problem. So he takes his kid out of that school. He sends him to another school and finds out it happens there too. Well, they've got problems too. So he takes him out of that school, sends him to another school, and they've got problems because he refuses to see that which is right before him. He doesn't want to see it. He knows, but he doesn't know because he doesn't want to know. And we've seen that before. Maybe we're guilty of that. Well, my question is, where are we doing this with God, with our walk with God? We don't like the thought of him being all-powerful and ruling and being in our business. We don't like the thought that some days there's going to be a judgment day. We don't want to think about that, so we suppress the truth. And it says here, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. A couple things I want you to see right off the bat right here. We're talking about the wrath of God. The wrath of God, that should get your attention. You think about plagues, you think about famine, you think about curses, you think about war. You think about the removal of God's blessings. You think about the removal of God's provisions. That's how that plays out. That's the wrath of God. Against all what? Against all godlessness. Think about what that is. It's crimes against God is what that is. Where you are guilty because God has said, this is what I want you to do. And you basically say, oh yeah, I'm not doing it. Have you ever done it? Nobody would do that, would they? We all do that. We're all guilty of this. Godlessness. And against all wickedness. What's that? That's crimes against each other. And why is this happening? Why the wrath of God? Because we are suppressing the truth. We're guilty of suppressing the truth because we should know better. We know, but we don't want to know. This is where I've been talking about last week and where I'm going. Truth matters. And that Jesus came to testify to the truth. Jesus is the truth, is what he says, and the truth will set you free. Think about all that. And we're suppressing the truth. What does that look like? How do we do that? We dodge it, we distort it, we evade it, we accuse others, we blame shift, deflect. And to understand this whole concept of suppressing the truth, what we're doing here, it's not out of ignorance. It's intentional. Maybe subconsciously, but we're intentionally suppressing the truth. And I've got an illustration, kind of like a think about a beach ball that you're trying to hold under the water. You keep trying to hold it under the water. It keeps trying to come up to the surface, and you keep pushing it down. That's what we're doing with truth. So think about that beach ball, how we're pushing it down. Think about truth. How am I guilty of pushing the truth down? Because I don't want to see it. And then in the critical question that we've got to, when I'm looking at this passage, what is the truth that we are suppressing? And I think this is key because I don't think this is talking about politics. I don't think this is talking about the media. I don't think this is talking about cultural issues. It's talking about, and this is more important than all those things. And those things are important. But this is more important than all those things. All those things are probably happening because of this. Because we are suppressing the truth of the knowledge of God. That's exactly what the passage says, and this is so important. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain. It's plain to them because God has made it plain to them. It's in your face, and yet you want to push it down because you don't want to deal with it. What may be known about God, this is what's being suppressed. We know, but sometimes we don't know, and it's all because we don't want to know. But he's made it plain, and you think about how he's made it plain. I think I have this verse in the New American Standard up there. Because that which is known about God is evident within them. For God has made it evident to them. So I want you to look at the evidence. Look at this evidence that God has made, that he's made plain within us and to us. And first of all, I want us to look at the evidence that he's made plain to us. And you keep on reading the passage here, verse 20, for since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, his divine nature have been clearly seen so that we are all without excuse. From what is being understood from what has been made so that men are without excuse. Creation itself, God's creation, God's wonderful creation, his invisible qualities, his eternal power, his divine nature have been clearly seen. It should be, what the Bible's saying, it should be obvious to you. And so I got a few illustrations here for you, a few examples that I want you to think about here. Creation itself, what the scientists tell us, you know, it all happened with a big bang. They deny the truth of Genesis 1 and Genesis 2. No, it was a big bang. To which my question is, well, where did the bang come from? Well, we haven't figured that out yet. Okay, well, maybe it's God. No. So that's how this works, you know. They do not want to surrender to God. They do not want to acknowledge God. So they come up with everything but God. And then you think about the purpose of creation. I've got here, not only do we have the question of why there is something rather than nothing, we should ask why our creation appears, why does it appear so finely tuned? And if you thought about it, that is what fascinates me, this world that we live in. It's so beautifully calibrated so that everything works together as it's supposed to be working together. The more we learn about this, the more amazing it becomes. Scientists say that life on Earth depends on multiple factors that are so precise that if they were off even by one hair, life could not exist. They call this the Goldilocks principle. The Goldilocks principle. Things are just right for human life. Just right. And see, Carl Sagan, he kind of started, I would give him the credit for Star Trek, if you're a Star Trekkie. He gets credit for that because he says life can happen on any planet if you just had a couple of things. You have to be the right distance from the sun, and you need something else. I don't know, water or something like that. You just need two things for life to exist. So we spend trillions and trillions of dollars to look for life on other planets. When scientists tell us now, you need over 500 things to work perfectly together for life to exist. Figure the odds of that happening. But some of the examples, you think about the atmosphere. Got a picture here of the atmosphere. And I know you can't read that. I can't read that. But basically it says for this atmosphere to be perfect, you need 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, 0.5% argon, 0.03% carbon dioxide. And it has to be just exact because if the oxygen level just dropped by just a few percentage points, what would happen? We wouldn't have oxygen. We'd all suffocate. And we'd all die. If we had too much oxygen, what would happen? We would blow up, and we would all die. You think about the CO2, if it was just a little higher or just a little bit lower, the earth would either become an oven or there would be no atmosphere at all. I mean, either way, we would all die. And then I got a picture here of an iceberg. I want you to think about water and a water molecule. This is fascinating to me. I don't have time to get into this. I couldn't do it if I tried. But water molecules is the only molecule whose solid form is ice. The form ice, it's less dense than its liquid form. It's the only molecule, only the solid form is less dense than its liquid form. Now, why that's important is because it means when water freezes, it floats because it's less dense. Everything else would sink. And think about what would happen if water was more dense when it froze, like everything else, it would sink. So the oceans would freeze from the bottom up, which means all the water would come up, which means it would flood the earth, which means we would all die. That's really my point. We'd all die, okay? And in, the distance of the earth from the sun, if it was 2% closer, if the earth was 2% closer to the sun, we would burn up. We would all die. Got it? You're getting where I'm going with this. The tilt of the earth, the 23.5% tilt of the earth, if it was any different, we'd all die. And I got Jupiter up here. Jupiter fascinates me because I didn't know why all these planets out there existed. I mean, why? There's got to be a purpose. It's God's creation. There's got to be a purpose to it all. And one thing that I've read, which I thought was brilliant, is it blocks the earth from all these asteroids hitting the earth. Because if Jupiter wasn't there, asteroids would hit the earth on a regular basis. And we would all... Thank you. Okay, I knew somebody would play. So you look at God's creation, you look at the atmosphere, you look at the how well fine-tuned everything is. And I've said this just a few months ago, I was talking about this. DNA is God's slam dunk. Was it Francis Collins? He says, how could a cosmic accident ever result in something of this digital elegance of a DNA strand? He goes on, it's like thinking an explosion at an ink factory could inadvertently produce the collected work of Shakespeare. Yeah, can you set off a bomb and come up with Shakespeare? No, you can't do that. And yet people want to deny there's a God. They want to suppress that truth. They want to push that beach ball down into the water because they don't want to deal with it. They don't want to see it. And I talked about the probability of all this happening. How could all these things just happen? And people say, you know, well, after billions and billions and billions of years, you maybe, you know, the laws of probability. Well, that's nonsense. Scientists say the odds of a planet like Earth existing are so heart-stoppingly astronomical that the notion that it all just happened, it defies common sense. And then I read this illustration. I thought this was beautiful. Think if I were playing you in a game of poker, and we were playing poker all night long. And I don't like poker, so I like euchre, but that would be different. It would be a wrong illustration. But, okay, so poker, we're playing poker all night, and I deal all night long. And every hand I deal, I get four aces. Imagine the laws of probability on that. Go figure. Now, that wouldn't play in dodge, would it? No, you'd shoot me, you know? Something is wrong here. And yet we accept that when scientists say, well, if billions and billions and billions of years... It's hogwash, is what that is. That's suppressing the truth. There's a God. I wrote down here, it takes an anti-God bias to think it just happened. It takes willful blindness not to acknowledge God. It takes intentionality to hold that truth down. And not allow it to change you and transform you and guide you in every decision you make. Many great atheist intellectuals in the last 100 years who've become Christians, and I've got names here, T.S. Eliot, C.S. Lewis, A.N. Wilson, Joad, all these different people here, they've all said, what brought me to faith was not some new argument or evidence. I just admitted to myself that I always knew there was a God. They just let the beach ball come back up. They allowed the truth to surface and they acknowledged it. There is a God. So you think about the evidence to you, but now before we get too far into this here, I want you to think about the evidence within. The evidence that he's put within your heart. The fact that you know right from wrong. Somebody didn't have to teach you right from wrong. You can tell a baby no and they immediately feel guilty. Yep, hey, sorry. Didn't mean to do that. You know, so a baby knows right from wrong when you get on them. They understand that. We have a sense of guilt that has to be dealt with. And only human beings have this thing called guilt. You don't see this in the animal kingdom. When they kill their prey, they don't feel guilty about it. It's especially true of cats. You think about cats, they don't feel guilty. They're evil. They're just evil. They feel no guilt at all. But we feel guilt. We're human beings. God put that within us. That's evidence that there's a right and wrong. It's evidence there's a holy God. And I got one more illustration for you. Life experiences. You think about life experiences. Back in 2009, British journalist and biographer for A.N. Wilson, who is an atheist, made quite a sensation when he declared himself to be a Christian. He said, the Western world, we've been told that only stupid people believe in Christianity. But then he says, as a matter of fact, it is atheism that is dry, lifeless, creed, totally irrational. Atheism says that we're just a collection of chemicals. It has no answer whatsoever to the question of how this accidental bag of chemicals could be capable of things like love and heroism and poetry. You think, how did this bag of chemicals, how are we able to produce songs and art and buildings and all that we do? And he talks about we're the capability of loving, of experiencing meaning in life, of laughing. And let me take you back to the animal kingdom again. How many times do you see an animal laugh? Do animals laugh? Does your dog laugh? I've got a picture here of a dog laughing. See, that's not natural, okay? They don't do that. We do that. We laugh. We enjoy life. Can chemicals just do that? Is that not evidence there is a God? Has he not made himself clear to us, plain to us, and yet we want to deny that? We want to suppress that? So the conclusion of all this evidence I've tried to give you here, the conclusion from seeing the evidence that God has made plain to us, it says in verse 21, and this is a very important verse, for although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. And I would tell you that that's the issue that causes all other issues. You can look at all the things that are wrong with the world, and I would take you back to this verse right here. It's because of this. I look at this verse, and a couple conclusions I see here. One, first, we should conclude, first of all, that God exists and that he's real. And when you look at all the evidence, it tells you so much about God, that he's infinitely powerful. He's omniscient. He's eternal. He's awesome. He's just. He's good. He supplies us with all these things, life, air, breath, food, all the things we need for our enjoyment. Look at all that he's given us. And so it goes far beyond that he exists. We understand his character. We understand his nature. We understand his love for us from all this. We should acknowledge that. First thing we should do is acknowledge that. And then we should respond by glorifying him. As was, although they knew God, they neither glorified him, or as the second thing, give thanks to him. They didn't give thanks to him because they suppressed the truth that he even exists. But when you let the beach ball come back up, you can't help but to glorify him. You can't help but to thank him. The reason we exist is to glorify his name, to give thanks to him in the way that we think, the way that we act, the way that we feel. And I found a verse this week that I wanted to put this up there. Psalm 50, verse 23. He who sacrifices thank offerings honors me. This is what God says. He who sacrifices thank offerings honors me. And he prepares the way so that I may show him the salvation of God. God is saying, he prepares. The person who thanks me is the person who prepares a way for me to show myself to him. And so if you're not thanking God on a regular basis, then what I'm reading here, you're making it hard for him to reveal himself to you. He can't show himself to you. That's how important this is, that we be a grateful people to God, not just once a year. I don't think just once a week cuts it. This should be our lifestyle, thanking God, praising God, so he can reveal himself to us, so we can see the truth, so we can know the truth, so the truth can actually set us free. Glorifying God and thanking God is essential for our health and our well-being. God has created a universe in which we get the blessings and he gets the glory. It's how it should be. He should get the glory for all the blessings he's given us. And the crime, after you look at all the proof, all the evidence, and all that I've said, and the conclusion, the crime here is we don't. We don't acknowledge he exists. If we do acknowledge he exists, we're not glorifying his name. We're not giving him thanks. This is a problem of the text, Romans 1, verse 18. We suppress the truth by our wickedness, by the way we treat one another. We're keeping that beach ball under the water. Don't let it up, because we don't want to deal with that. Romans 1, 25, we exchange the truth of God for a lie. Intentionally, we're exchanging the truth of God, all that I've talked about, we buy into a lie that we came from monkeys. It's, you know, I thought about this here. I watched a video in a perspectives class, and these missionaries, I think it was in Indonesia, they were trying to present the gospel to this tribe in Indonesia, and it came up, the video, that the people thought they came from frogs. And I laughed. I just, that is crazy. People thought they came from frogs. Yeah, we think we came from monkeys. We're all idiots. We came from God. Okay, so that's enough of that. Look at verse 28. Furthermore, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to a depraved mind to do what ought not to be done. See, we exchange the truth. We distort it. We hide it. We run from it. We don't think it's worthwhile passing this on to our children. We don't retain it. We don't tell others about it. And this is where we're at. Because we want to make the rules. We want to be supreme. We want what we want. We want the glory. I don't know why we're suppressing truth. It could be that those reasons. It could be a bunch of other reasons. I don't know why, but we suppress the truth. We are people who suppress. It's our human nature, our sinful nature, that we don't want to deal with it. We don't want to deal with God. So the punishment, and it's in verse 28, he gave them over to a depraved mind. Since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to a depraved mind to do what ought not to be done. Verse 21 says, although they knew God, they neither glorified God nor gave thanks to him, so their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. See, so this is a result of suppressing the truth. Of not dealing with the truth, of not acknowledging who God is, not giving him the glory, not giving him the thanks. We exchange the truth of God for a lie, which corrupts our worship. You see that in verse 25, they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator, who is forever to be praised. So it corrupts our worship, it corrupts our relationships. Because of this, is what it says in verse 26, because of this, God gave them over to shameful lust. Even their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural ones. The men did the same thing. Because of their depraved minds, it corrupted their minds. He gave them over to depraved minds. Their thinking became futile. They corrupted their hearts. Their foolish hearts were darkened. It corrupted their actions. You see this in verse 29. They have become filled with every kind of wickedness and evil and greed and depravity. I'm going slow here because I want you to see this is our world today. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice, they're gossips, slanderers, God haters, insolent, arrogant, boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. They are senseless. They are faithless. They are heartless. They are ruthless. Is this not the world that we live in right now? And why? It's because we're suppressing the truth of God. And then get this, verse 32, although they know God's righteous decrees that those who do such things deserve death. See, right, they deserve death. They know they deserve death. And it is that not only do they continue to do these very things, but they also approve of those who practice them. So they deserve death because of their rebellion to God. And what I'm reading here, they don't care. They don't care. And to add one more insight, the problem here is they are us. As much as I want to talk about those people out there, it's not the point. The point of the passage is we're all doing this. We're all guilty. Romans 3, verse 9-10, what shall we conclude then? Are we any better? Not at all. we've all made the charge that Jews and Gentiles alike are all under sin. As is written, there is no one righteous, not even one. Oh, you can talk about other people who are suppressing the truth. Will you acknowledge today where you're suppressing the truth? I can't fix them. I can't fix you either. But I can try. I'm trying to give us something that will help us so we can experience the truth and be set free by the truth. And it begins by asking, where are you suppressing the truth? Where are you not allowing God to truly be all that he is? So my goal today, first of all, my goal, I got a couple goals here. One of the goals is to get us back to acknowledging God and glorifying God and being a people who are grateful to God. To understand how important, how essential that is. And I hope from what I've said, you get that is huge. Are you living a life acknowledging God, glorifying God, and being grateful to God? Are you willing to acknowledge the evidence that has been made plain to you? Are you willing to change as a result of it? Or do you want to keep on pushing that beach ball down? Are you ready to acknowledge God, that he is great, that he is powerful, that he is good, that he is just, that he is to be glorified, that he is to be praised? Another goal that I have in preaching the sermon is that I don't want you to be foolish, to be depraved by this constant suppression of the truth. I don't want you to succumb to having a depraved mind. And the third goal that I have is that by studying this, it would truly help us to understand what the good news is. Because this is how Romans 1 actually starts. I started at verse 18. But you go before 18, and Paul, a servant of Christ Jesus, he opens up about the good news. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, the good news, because it's the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. First for the Jew, then for the Gentile. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last. Just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. Now, as I've said all this, if I was successful at heaping a bunch of guilt on you today, whew, fire and brimstone stuff, you know, then come to this verse and let this verse dominate. Let this verse speak to you as loudly as possible. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed. And that righteousness is not a standard, a code of conduct that we are called to live by. If you do this, you will be blessed. If you don't do this, you'll be cursed. It's not a standard. The righteousness that the gospel reveals to us, it's not a standard. It's a gift that God freely gives us. His Son, Jesus Christ. And if you can truly understand that, comprehend that, the gospel shows that even though all of us alike have turned away from God and our hearts have grown selfish and wicked and corrupt, we acknowledge this, that God keeps coming after us. Why would he do that? And he keeps coming after us, and he keeps coming after us. The gospel shows us something about God's creation that creation can never show us, that God is faithful, a pursuing father who wouldn't let us go even after we rejected him. After we have done everything we can to suppress him, he sends his Son Jesus Christ to die for our sins. And when it came time to pour out his wrath on us, his judgment on us, he poured it out first on himself to release us from the guilt, to release us from the consequences, from the punishment. If we would accept and trust in all that his Son Jesus Christ has done for us in dying on that cross to set us free. So the good news here, Romans 5 verse 8 says it really well. God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, while we were still suppressing the truth, while we were still holding that beach ball down, Christ died for us. So we study Romans 1 verses 18 and 19, and we can see the power of God, the evidence of the power of God, that which is made plain to us. And you study it, and you can see the justice of God, that which is God has made plain within us. But when you look at Jesus Christ, when you look at the gospel, that's when you know the love of God. He is a good God, a faithful God. And he's giving you something to help heal you, to help save you, to help pull you out of the darkness of depravity. He's giving you his son, Jesus Christ. And that's a truth that you cannot afford to suppress. He came to be your Savior as he died on the cross to take your sins away. But that can only happen if you acknowledge him as Lord, as Master. Please do not suppress that truth. Please embrace that truth. And give him all the glory and all the praise. Let's pray. Lead me to you.